Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're in for a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. We're live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. And as we continue to roll through the week, we inch a little bit closer to the restart of the NBA basketball season. That's approaching. We talked about this a lot yesterday, kind of previewed what the restart would look like. But it's baseball that has been at the front, and mostly because of the lack of a plan and now an outbreak regarding a team. And in all honesty, after we were off the air yesterday, I started thinking, well, the NBA's plan is as solid as it can possibly be. It's obviously not foolproof because you can't predict what this virus is going to do. But still, Major League Baseball seem to be lacking a bit as far as preparing and being prepared for something like this to happen. Well, baseball had no choice. They had to take a step today. And as of right now, MLB has postponed all of the Miami Marlins games through Sunday because of this outbreak. So Major League Baseball announcing that the next six games, starting with tonight's contest against Baltimore, have been postponed. And this means that the Marlins have now moved to daily testing and will remain in Philadelphia where they played last week. They're going to gather some more information, and that's according to Derek Jeter, CEO of the squad. But the postponements were announced today, and now a series of scheduling changes have to involve some other teams. So the Orioles, they were scheduled to host the Marlins in a two-game series beginning Wednesday, tomorrow. Instead, they will now host the Yankees for games Wednesday and Thursday. The Yankees were scheduled to play the Phillies in Philadelphia tonight, but that game has been officially postponed. We talked about that yesterday. And the Phillies were scheduled to play games tomorrow and Thursday in New York against the Yankees. They are now traveling to Baltimore instead. So Major League Baseball really had to rework the schedule, change some things up. It also impacts the Washington Nationals because they are slated to play a three-game series with Miami on Friday. And a majority of Washington players voted against playing the Marlins earlier today. And if you thought that it was bad enough yesterday with the outbreak for the Marlins, apparently four additional players tested positive today. Four members of the Marlins, not necessarily players. And multiple reports now say that total is up to 17 to 18 members of their traveling party. Now, Major League Baseball also made the announcement today that it's conducted more than 6,400 tests since this past Friday, and there have been no new positive results for COVID-19 as far as the field personnel from the other 29 teams outside of the Marlins. And so with that being said, some massive changes to the baseball schedule, but we will continue. And in fact, we have a game going on right now as we reach the seventh inning. Cleveland up 4-2 on the Chicago White Sox. The White Sox were a sexy pick, remember? A lot of people were high on Chicago. This was the team that was supposed to push in the Central. The White Sox are in danger of dropping to 1-3 if they can't pull from behind and top the Cleveland Indians. Again, that game in the seventh inning, a two-run deficit. We take a look at games that are beginning right now. The Toronto Blue Jays are getting set to take on the World Series champion Washington Nationals. 4:40 tonight, or this afternoon, I should say, we get the Cubs and the Reds. This game yesterday was so unique. John Lester was dealing for the Chicago Cubs. In fact, he had a shutout. He was pitching to contact. I think he had one or two Ks. But after five innings, Lester had shut out the Cincinnati Reds. Cubbies go to the bullpen. All of a sudden, it becomes a shootout. Final score, Cubs win 8-7. Some bullpen issues for both the Cubs and the Reds. Makes for some interesting baseball. That game is set for 4:40 tonight. Also at 4:40, we get the Braves and the Rays. 5 o'clock, Milwaukee's at Pittsburgh. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, Game two between the White Sox and the Indians. We get the Royals and the Tigers, and the Mets will battle the Boston Red Sox. 6:10 start time tonight. St. Louis is on the road to take on Minnesota. We get Arizona at Texas at 7 o'clock, as well as the Dodgers and the Astros. Walker Buehler will make his debut for L.A. He was, I don't want to say a favorite, but a lot of pundits' picks for the Cy Young. He's fifth in that Dodger rotation. He'll get a start tonight against the Astros. Seattle travels to meet the Angels at 7:40. Tonight on ESPN+, it's the Rockies and the A's. I really like this Oakland A's team. I believe they have a true chance to come out of the American League 3-1 so far, and it's the way that they've done it. They've only allowed 11 runs over the course of four games, and so they're getting it done defensively, and you know that they have the firepower on offense as well with a number of hitters that can go yard. It's an exciting team to watch. A's, Rockies tonight. Then we get the Padres and the Giants. The Padres are another team that have been a lot of fun to watch so far. We talked about Tommy Pham, the addition that they made in the offseason, but there's a lot of young talent on the San Diego Padre roster. So that's a look at what's happening in the national sports front right now from a schedule perspective. Let's talk about the NFL. A number of players have chose to opt out of the 2020 season, and that list continues to grow, and I think the list is going to get bigger and bigger. In fact, one of the latest to opt out was Marquise Goodwin of the Philadelphia Eagles. He decided to opt out, and he cited his little daughter, his baby daughter, for doing so. And now if you take a look at the list of players, I mean, we're beyond 15. The Ravens had DeAnthony Thomas and Andre Smith. The Bills had star Loto Lele. The Cowboys had Maurice Kennedy and Stephen Gildry. Devin Funchess of the Green Bay Packers has opted out. Eddie Vanderdoes of the Houston Texans. Dante Hightower has said that he will not play for the New England Patriots this year, as well as Brandon Bolden. Cole Wick of the New Orleans Saints has opted out. Michael Pierce of the Vikings. Anthony McKinney of the Titans. Chance Warmack of the Seahawks. Marcus Cannon of the Patriots. Caleb Brantley of the Washington football team. And so the list continues to grow, and I believe it's going to continue to grow over the next couple of days, because according to some reports on Twitter, players have opted out, but the paperwork has yet to be filed. So the NFL season is going to look a lot different, no question about it. And again, going back to the conversation that we had with Major League Baseball players, I don't believe anybody can truly blame any player that opts out of the season. They are forfeiting their salary for this year. They're not going to get paid. But here's another interesting aspect. The NFL is all about next man up. How often do you see players lose jobs due to an injury? With these players opting out, it provides younger, cheaper contracts and opportunity to perform, and I think this is going to make the 2021 free agency period look very unique, to say the least. I mean, seriously, I think that this is going to have ramifications if we do, in fact, get an NFL season. With all these players opting out, the free agent market in 2021 is going to be unique, to say the least. And some news coming out of the NBA as well, just a couple of days from restarting the season. Again, Thursday night, we have a doubleheader. And the number one team of the Western Conference, the Los Angeles Lakers, a scary situation. Anthony Davis could miss Thursday night's game due to an eye injury. He was poked in the right eye by Michael Carter Williams this past Saturday during a scrimmage game against the Magic. He did not practice today, and he spent the session in a seat on the sideline while wearing shaded eyewear. Frank Vogel said that there's some discomfort when talking about the injury to Anthony Davis. He looked dominant in the second scrimmage. I mean, good news for the Lakers. Anthony Davis looks healthy. He looks rested. But right now, he is questionable for Thursday night's restart matchup with the Los Angeles Clippers. Lou Williams already out of that game. Montrezl Harrell as well for the Clippers. That game Thursday night could look drastically different for both teams. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to take a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Local sports recap is on its way. Plus, we're going to talk about the fall sports season at the junior college level. We'll be joined by Coach Jared Woodhouse of the USU Eastern men and women's soccer team. And also, we're going to talk boxing on the show today. It was announced that Mike Tyson would be going toe-to-toe with Roy Jones Jr. Are you interested in this fight? I'm a sucker, not necessarily for a sideshow or a circus act, but for nostalgia. So, yeah, I'll watch the fight. We'll talk about that when we return. It's Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Got local soccer. Should be gearing up for the college fall sports season, but unfortunately the NJCAA has pushed that back to the spring, which means fall and winter is going to look a little different. Now, we have had conversations about this in the past, but today we are going to talk with Coach Jared Woodhouse of the USU Eastern men and women's soccer squads as he gears up for what's going to be an unorthodox 2020-21 season. Coach, it's a pleasure to get you on today. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. I love being on with you.
Well, it's always fun, Coach, and I know right now a lot of uncertainty. I think we have the ability to have a conversation that I feel fairly confident in saying we'll probably never have again. The idea that a worldwide pandemic is going on at the moment as you take over the USU Eastern program, and it has thrown some uncertainty, I know, around the 2020-2021 season. We now know there will be no season in the fall. Instead, we're moving soccer to the spring. I'm sure this has really changed things for you in the USU Eastern program, I would assume.
In some ways, I mean, obviously, you try and look at the good things about it. Because we didn't get a spring, our teams always make a lot of progress in the spring because they get to take training maybe a little bit at a slower pace. They get to focus on improving in certain areas that they struggled during the season in the fall, and so spring is always a really important time for us. And we didn't get a spring this year because obviously the pandemic hit and all the kids went home. And so having the fall, at least in that regard, will help us because it'll allow us over the fall to maybe take things a little slower. And so when our season does start in the spring, April 2nd, we will be maybe just a little bit more prepared. Our kids will have had time to transition from their high school and club style to a college style, which is far more up pace and far more difficult. And so if I want to look at the positives, that I guess is a positive, but there are plenty of negatives as well. I'm losing kids right and left, kids that had planned on coming for that are part of the LDS church, and they were going to come in the fall and then leave for their missions in the spring. And now I've got three or four of them that have said, well, if we're moving to the spring, it doesn't make sense for me to stay for both semesters, so I'm just going to go now. And so I'm having kids that I thought were going to come in and play a big part in our team success this year that are dropping off. We've had some other kids that, because of the pandemic, have had emotional issues, depression, anxiety, because of what's going on in the world. And so they've been struggling with that, and they're feeling like it would be better if they took a year off as well. And so, I mean, I'm just losing a lot of kids that would otherwise be here. So, I mean, there's definitely some negatives, but, I mean, as a coach, you got to do your best to look at the positives.
Oh, no question. And I know this affects every school across the board. And that's the other thing to keep in mind. I mean, especially within the conference, Coach, there has been an addition with Truckee Meadows to the conference most recently. This affects everything across the board. So when you put together a schedule now, trying to get as many games as you can, as you're allowed to, I should say, in the fall, where you could play eight different opponents, and you take a look at the preparation for now this spring, I mean, what type of strategy goes into mapping out the opponents that you'll play?
So, you know, that's a great question. I would love to, normally what we do in the spring, part of the reason why we progress is because we can take training sessions a little bit slower. They're not quite as intense. There can be a lot more explanation of the tactical differences or tactical changes that we need to make. And then we get to implement those tactical changes against D1 and D2 schools. Before the pandemic hit this last spring, our men had the opportunity to go up and play a Division I team in UVU, and that's hugely beneficial because when you play a bigger school like that, you play a big-time program, they're always ranked in the top 20, and that's in Division I NCAA, you can take away a lot from those games and learn a lot in those games. And so that's one of the things we missed out on. That game was at the end of February, and then March hit, and the pandemic hit, and then our spring season was done. So in the fall, this fall, I would like to mirror what we try to do in the spring. usually, which is play, you know, D2 schools like Mesa State in Grand Junction, play Westminster up in Salt Lake, play UVU, play Dixie. Like to get those games in. The problem is unlike the NJCAA, the NCAA hasn't changed. They're still going to play in the fall. And so that limits their capabilities of putting together games against us. And so the likelihood that we're going to be able to play those teams and therefore improve ourselves is not looking very promising. I've sent out emails over the last week and a half trying to find possible games with those teams, and all of them come back with the same response: "Hey, coach, we'd love to, you know, have a game with you again, but our season right now, as it stands, is still going on, and we don't have any openings. There's no way for us to fit you in, and that sort of thing. And so right now, it's looking more and more like we're going to have to play, you know, some teams that we play in the regular season that just aren't in our conference. Like we're going to have to bring some teams down from Wyoming, or maybe some teams up from Arizona, or vice versa, and that makes things far more difficult. Budget-wise, it makes things difficult because they're not local if we have to travel, and just from perspective of how much we can progress as a team, it makes things more difficult. And then it's not likely to prepare us, not impossible, but not likely to prepare us as well for the spring, or for our what will be our regular season in this coming spring.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jared Woodhouse of the USU Eastern men and women's soccer teams as we talk about the changes to the schedules. So, Coach, as far as just trying to get everything finalized, when do you anticipate, or have we reached that point where everything is close, or when do you anticipate it being finalized schedule-wise?
Oh, man, I wish. No. So we've sent out a couple of emails with a couple of different proposals, and we're just trying to get kind of voted on those proposals. Right now, we do not have one game at all. The way that the NJCAA has structured it for the spring now, because that's when our season will be, is from April 2nd until May 24th, you have to fit in all of your conference games, you have to fit in your region games, or your region tournament games, and then you have to fit in your district games, because the week after the 24th is when they're going to hold nationals. So basically they're going to hold nationals like the first week in June. And so because of that, it's a very condensed schedule. They're claiming, the NJCAA is saying, that we're going to be able to fit 14 games in that time period. There's no way. We were looking at it as coaches the other day and trying to put together these mock schedules to see what one would pass. And just playing our regular conference games, it only allows for 1 week of out-of-conference games. And then basically we have to fit three games into Tuesday, Thursday, and Monday to fit in our region tournament games and our district game. And so it's just become very, very difficult to fit in all that. But if you don't fit that in, then you can't go to the national tournament. So if we, for example, were to win conference and then win the region tournament, but we weren't able to find a day to play the district game, then we don't get to go to nationals. You have to win a district in order to be invited to the national tournament. And so, I mean, it's really tough. We've got a couple of proposals on the table. We're just waiting to hear back what one, you know, is likely to pass, and then we'll go from there. But it looks like right now that our first games of the countable games of the season will be April, I guess, 8th and 10th in the spring. And then we'll just try and fit all of our conference in as quickly as we can and quickly do a region tournament, even if we're forced to do a back-to-back day, which for soccer is really bad to play on a Friday and then play on a Saturday. It's really difficult to do with how much running you do. You just kill your body that way, so...
Well, we can end with this, Coach, and I know in the landscape, especially junior college sports, I mean, this is something that I'm sure is affecting universities, but the turnaround at a university is not near what it is at the JUCO level, and I've had conversations with other junior college coaches. How has this affected your future plan? And again, I think it's very, people sometimes have a short-sighted view. It doesn't just affect 2020, 2021. This affects you all the way, let's say, to 2025. I mean, this is a long-term effect.
Oh, certainly. I mean, it's definitely going to do that at the NCAA level. I believe it is going to set back recruiting, probably, like you said, to 2024, 2025. With us, I see it affecting us maybe for 2 years. The issue is I'm going to have to rely on film, which I don't like to do, in recruiting for next fall. So next year at this time, I'm going to have girls coming in that I've seen film of them, but I've not seen them play live. And that is really, really, really difficult because film's good on its surface, but it doesn't always give you enough information to go on. They can look just absolutely marvelous on film, but they could be playing, you know, the worst team in their division. And so everybody looks like an all-star against that team. And so it's really, really difficult in that regard, because I can see it really affecting, especially how late I took over the women's team. I took over the women's team basically in February of this year, and then less than a month later, the pandemic hits and we're shut down. And so not only do I have girls that I've been their assistant, but I've never really been the head train, you know, the guy that trained them, but also I have, you know, 11 girls coming in that were recruited by the previous head coach that don't know me, I don't really know them, and then on top of that, next year I'm going to have to base my recruiting off of mainly film because I'm not going to be able to go see them because our season's at the wrong time for the recruiting process. If we're playing in the spring, I'm going to miss out on a lot of the games where I get a lot of my recruited kids from. So I'm going to have to rely either on film or I'm going to have to rely on these kids coming to camps that we hold here at the school so that I can see them play. And it just becomes, you know, I can definitely see this affecting at least our women's team till 2023. And our men's team, since I got the recruiting done so early on our men's side this year, I believe it will only affect our men maybe until next year. But, yeah, it certainly has a detrimental effect to all of college athletics. It's been very, very sad.
Definitely. And, Coach, I know that you're a very busy man, so I appreciate you taking out the time to give us an update on what the situation looks like for the men's and women's soccer squads, and I look forward to many more conversations in the future.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll move to the national side of things. We'll talk boxing. It's a big fight coming up. Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. Is it good for boxing? And what's the outcome going to be? We'll talk about that when we return.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
Time for some boxing talk here on Drive Time Sports. I always look forward to the boxing chit-chat. It's been a couple of months since we've talked some boxing. Whenever we talk about it, though, we bring in Tony Whitby. He's been our Drive Time Sports boxing insider for many, many years, going on 10 years, actually. And now we have a nostalgic fight to talk about. Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. coming up on September 12th. Tony, always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always good to be here, JB.
I never would have thought in 2020 you and I would be talking about Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. But then again, 2020 has been wild from beginning to where we're at today. So why not? Throw it in the mix, right?
Yeah, I mean, as goofy as this may sound, why not? Literally, why not? I want to watch boxing. I don't care who's fighting at this point. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, and this is what I would caution those who want to buy the fight, know what you're buying, right? Because, Tony, you and I have had conversations like this for a decade now. My thought process has always been, when you have a prized fighter, an accomplished prized fighter, nobody has the right to tell that prized fighter when to hang it up. Now, with that, you have to beware as a buyer. If you believe that you're going to purchase this fight on September 12th, which is an exhibition, 8-round exhibition contest with larger gloves, if you think you're buying this and you're going to see the Mike Tyson that sparked your interest in boxing back in the late 80s, or if you're going to see Roy Jones, who had a long reign as pound for pound number one in the world, you're going to be sadly disappointed. If you understand that you're buying an exhibition and we are watching two old fighters that we grew up watching and we enjoy watch fighting, you're probably going to be happy with it. So that would be my recommendation to the fans. Know what you're buying and go in with a really, really low expectation.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is not happening because of, you know, 30 years or 25 years, or let alone 20 years or even 10 years of what if Mike Tyson ever fought Roy Jones and let's make it 12 rounds and for a title fight and we're finally going to get to see the decision or the title bout of a lifetime. No, 100%. This is an exhibition fight. This is more similar, and I'm not saying stylistically or fight-wise, but it's like watching Mayweather fight and I just can't pull it up right now, but the Japanese fighter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's more of that. Again, it's an exhibition. So, like, when I first heard the news, I'm like, oh, they're really going to fight? I'm like, oh, dude, there's no way Tyson's going to lose this. But when you really start to, you know, pull back the curtain a little bit and you start looking at them, like, oh, yeah, it's for funsies. If you want to watch some fun boxing on a night, then this is something for you. Now, for all the Tyson fans out there, and myself included, you're going to like this. For all the Roy Jones Jr. fight fans out there, you're going to like this. You know, you get to see them fight one more time against each other and see what happens. You know, and, you know, I don't know. At the end of the day, I know who I brought to the dance and who I'm picking, but it's going to be fun at the end of the day. That's all it is. So it's not that serious. A lot of people are really trying to break this down and getting the nuances, and I'll do it, like, because I've been doing this my entire life, so I'll do it and I'll break it down. But yeah, it's a good time. And, you know, there's some undercard bouts that are starting to be announced about it that are just as goofy, if not even more goofy. So we'll talk about those at another time as they continue to roll out.
Yeah, we'll break this fight down in just a moment, but first, let's talk about this. Is this type of sideshow good for the sport of boxing? And I know that that's a conversation and a question that gets brought up anytime we have a fight that's out of the norm. It was brought up when Mayweather fought McGregor. And look, that turned out to be a pretty entertaining fight for all the circus that was hyped around it, which I got totally sick and tired of leading up to it. The fight itself wasn't bad. But that was a question that was asked at that point in time. Is this actually good for boxing? And I think that particular fight put the thought in a lot of people's minds that these quote-unquote sideshows, you can generate some money. Now, this fight's not going to generate anywhere near what Mayweather-McGregor did. It's also on a much smaller scale. But it seems like that fight right there maybe started a trend, Tony, and I don't know if that's necessarily good for the sport unless you go in with reasonable expectations.
Let's say it's the truth is somewhere in the middle on both sides of this. You know,
okay.
I think we can both recall a time where Mitt Romney, you know, fought Evander Holyfield.
Sure.
Right? You know what I mean? So, and that was much more of a hoaxy thing, but still, you know, if you ask the question, is that good for boxing? I'm going to be like, yeah, if it's for charity, sure, why not? You know, whatever the case may be. Fine. And then on the flip side, when I talk about this fight, overall, I would say, yeah, it's absolutely good for boxing. Anytime it gets pressed, whether good or bad, boxing is the way it is. Yeah, it's always going to be good. I'm always going to be very agreement about it and just say, yeah, absolutely. However, from a medical standpoint, when it comes to Roy Jones Jr., you know, if you just look at the last 15 to 20 years and look how many times he's gotten knocked out by heavyweights and let alone other fighters, they were not pretty heavyweights and they're pretty knockouts. And this is one reason why it's probably an exhibition fight more so than anything else. He's lost very drastically, very ugly, let's just put it, in the last couple of the last 10 years of fights. So if it was a serious fight, even an old 53-year-old Tyson would be really, really dangerous. And so is that good for boxing? Absolutely not. So one side from a publicity and promotion, yes. But if I'm going to really break down this fight, I'm going to say, dude, not good for Roy Jones Jr. if it was a real fight. But because it's an exhibition, yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. But that needs to be noted as a major bullet point, you know, bullet footnote, if you will, because of that.
Tony Whitby again, our Drive Time Sports boxing analyst, as we talk about Roy Jones Jr. and Mike Tyson. Now, I agree with you. Roy Jones Jr. has had some fights where he's been knocked out. He's been knocked out brutally. Tony, you and I had this conversation over a quick text. And for the listeners that don't know, Tony is a Mike Tyson fan. I am on record of saying he's one of the most overrated heavyweights of all time. I thoroughly believe this. I'm not saying that Mike Tyson isn't exciting, and I don't want people to take the overrated tag as saying he's not good. That is not the case. Even though Roy Jones has had some fights where he has been knocked out brutally, let's be real. It was 15 years ago that Kevin McBride retired Mike Tyson. I mean, Tyson had a couple of performances in 2005 and 2004 that were not good. I mean, he was knocked out by Danny Williams, and he was retired by Kevin McBride.
Okay, so we are going to let go of the gloves. So here we go.
Hey, let's just be real. Let's be real. I mean, yes, I agree with you on Roy Jones, but in the same token, Mike Tyson did not look good during the final stages of his career 15 years ago.
I don't disagree, but he didn't. He, rather than continually fighting for the next decade after that, he hung it up. For whatever reasons, be it as it may, whatever, however you want to look at it. But Roy has continually, and obviously not doing the United States as well, and there may be some reasoning behind that also. He may not, you know, be medically sanctioned to be able to do so. I don't know. I'm speculating, so I shouldn't say that.
I would agree. No, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. That would have to be why. That would that's my thought process as to why. Who would give him a license at this point?
So when we go back to the original question, is it good for boxing? If somebody can't medically get licensed, it's probably somebody who shouldn't be fighting at all, which is why it's probably an exhibition. But if we are going to just strip it down fight for fight, remove some of the variables that we just spoke about, age and knockouts, whatnot, if we're talking stylistically, who's the natural heavyweight? Mike Tyson.
Sure.
If we go tit for tat on that, who's the better mover? Roy Jones, absolutely. If we're talking about footwork, using the entire ring, if we're just talking inside fighting footwork, I would say Tyson. So depending on how you want to argue footwork, I'm going to go Tyson. What's the first thing to go for a fighter?
Speed.
Both know this, the old adage, legs are the first things to go. So if he's already slowing down, who's the more chinny? Now, you could argue Tyson's chinny as well, but I'm going to largely disagree just based on how they got knocked out and how frequently and how recently. So I would put Roy Jones in that category of, you know, check mark in that box. He's the much more chinnier fighter. If you want to say who's been more active, sure, Roy Jones. So I'll give you that. But it is intriguing. In my opinion, I can't fathom a way in a real 10-round fight Roy Jones wins this fight without being, you know, the towel being thrown. I just can't see it. That being said, who's faster? You know, I just can't. I don't know, man. Maybe, and like you said, I am a Tyson fan. Maybe I'm fantasizing a little bit about who I see, or maybe I'm reading in too much on the 20 seconds of sparring videos that we see. Maybe, but Tyson's not that much older than Roy Jones. There's just a lot more mileage on Roy Jones Jr., in my opinion, and he's already the smaller guy. So I can't see him winning this fight.
You are a Tyson fan, but your opinion on Mike Tyson rings a little bit more true to me than the casual Tyson fan. Because
that's true.
You know boxing, and so I mean, you can go ahead and take that bias to Tyson. I think you made some fair points. In the same token, there's so many variables to consider here. I mean, I think we could have the conversation about prime going back and forth. The bottom line is, Mike Tyson had trouble with anyone who was A, taller, and if I'm not mistaken, Roy Jones has an inch or two on Tyson, so it may be a moot point, okay? But he had problems with someone that could move, someone that could jab, and someone that could drop the right hand over the top. That's why the Buster Douglas loss was not an upset in my mind. I mean, really, when you go back and look at it, it was a loss on merit, and there have been plenty of boxing pundits that have said that was a loss on merit, and that's why we didn't get a second fight between those two. Now, if we're going off of that logic, I think you check the box in Roy Jones' favor.
I also would check the box that I don't think that Tyson would be doing what he was doing the night before the fight before the Buster Douglas.
Let's hope not. Let's hope a 53-year-old man's not doing that.
Yes, I'm just going to say that. I'm going to speculate that one a little bit. I just think since retirement, one of them's been a little bit more cleaner and leaner, even though they've been retired longer. So maybe that old Cadillac has more miles on it, or it's a little bit older of a car. But, you know, that newer Cadillac that maybe is 5 years, 10 years, a little bit fresher, has a little bit more in that engine. Maybe this engine on this older Cadillac is more rebuilt. I don't know. I used to watch Roy Jones fight all the time at my best friend's house growing up. His dad had the black box, and he loved Roy Jones, and they came from the same neighborhoods. So I really understand his career, and then watching his downfall, that downfall lasted for so long that, and a lot of people, not just in mine, but in a lot of people's opinion, like, he shouldn't be fighting at all, even just for funsies, even just for an exhibition. So it's like, it's hard for me to think that a Tyson who hasn't fought in, you know, a decade and a half or whatnot, could lose to him, even if you like Tyson or don't like Tyson. Now, you know, we've talked about Tyson Holyfield a million times, and I know your boy, you know, got over on him twice and easily and whatnot. There's always the rumors that, you know, back in the pool halls, back in the Olympics, you know, about what happened there. So I always know where I stand when it comes to Tyson, but I also have a reality check of knowing where his limitations were and what happened with him. And he's a scarred beast, but I don't think he should be scared of a Roy Jones at this level. If this was maybe 10 years ago, 15, you know, 5 years ago, I don't know. I think Tyson's more groomed for something like this than Roy Jones, in my opinion.
Fair enough. And I think we can end with this. If it is a box office success, which, and I know that's very vague, and as we get closer to the event, which is still over a month and a half away, we'll have to actually break down what a success would look like. I wouldn't throw out that, look, we could see Tyson back in the ring. Maybe it is against Holyfield once again. There were rumors popping up there. This could actually be the beginning of something that we see for the next couple of years, Tony, as far as watching Tyson in these sort of exhibition bouts, if this one is a success and all goes accordingly.
Yeah, it's the Tyson get-back fights. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. We'll see how this one pans out. The last thing I would note, and obviously we have some time to build up before this fight begins or ever kicks off, let alone there's still rumors that it may not even happen. So let's just see. Right now we're dealing with the hyperbole and the hype of it. But the last other thing is, the other scary thing about this fight is, what if Roy Jones Jr. hits Tyson in a way that Tyson does not feel comfortable in an exhibition match? Which one do you think is willing to pop off and throw a little bit more heat on that punch if need be? I think it's Tyson, and that's a little bit scarier for Roy Jones Jr., in my opinion.
Sure.
So, I don't know. Just if this was, again, a real solid fight, and we really were breaking it down for 10 rounds, then I'd really want to spend more time on it. But that's not so much, and we got some time to build it up and talk about it some more. But I think it's fun, and people should continue to pay attention to it and see what happens.
Tony, I always look forward to having the boxing conversations with you. I know we have plenty more in the future. Great insight as always. I appreciate the time.
All right, man. You too.
We'll break one more time. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
Salud.
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 Crack your cups of beer, put them up, let's cheer, put them up, let's win. Here's a toast to never looking back again.
Time to raise our glasses and say cheers. Brought to you by the Handy Mart in Helper. Don't forget, baseball's back, basketball's back in a couple of days. Go check out the Beer Cave at Handy Mart in Helper. Best beer selection around. And today I'm going to raise my glass to Kyrie Irving. Beat up Kyrie Irving quite a bit here on Drive Time Sports. Be it with the issues regarding the restart for the NBA season or this man who believes that the earth is flat. Yeah, we've beat up on Kyrie over the last little while. But Kyrie did something yesterday that I definitely do not believe should go unnoticed. He's helping out the WNBA. He committed $1.5 million to supplement the income of players in the WNBA who choose not to play this season. If it's because of COVID-19 concerns or if it's for social justice reasons. Kyrie Irving stepped up, had some help. Natasha Cloud, she chose to set out. Jewel Lloyd, another one. He connected with several WNBA players, and they talked about the challenges that WNBA players face. And just to give you some sort of idea as to what a salary looks like in the WNBA, top annual salary is a little more than $200,000. So you can put that in perspective. In order to be eligible for the supplemental income, players must provide insight into the circumstances surrounding their decision, and they're not receiving salary support from any other entity. An opt-out for medical reasons must be connected to the COVID-19 pandemic. Cheers to Kyrie Irving. I'm a fan of the WNBA. I watch the WNBA. I have two daughters myself. I understand the importance of women in sports, be it high school, college, professional. And I often feel as if women's athletics get overlooked, especially on a professional level. For Kyrie Irving to step up and give $1.5 million of his own salary to help out for those players who cannot play this season during a worldwide pandemic or due to social justice issues, I tip my hat to Kyrie Irving. I raise my glass. I say cheers. That's going to do it for us on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll be back again to do it tomorrow. We'll be joined by Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher. He joins us every Wednesday. We'll have plenty more Major League Baseball to talk about. I want to thank Coach Jared Woodhouse and also Tony Whitby for taking out the time to join us. I'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.